We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, Yankee fans? Happy Monday. The Yankees are rolling. It was a big weekend for baseball with Hall of Fame inductions and everything. And it was a big weekend for Scott because he got a new puppy, Mattingly. How's it going?
Good, man. I just got back. I was on a family vacation down in Orlando, Florida. My wife, she won a Teacher of the Year award in our town. And one of the guys actually is a business owner around here, has a house in Florida. And he gave it to her for the win. He gives it to the Teacher of the Year every year for a week. So we actually had a free house in Orlando, which was awesome. And then my family was able to come down, and we had a week-long family vacation, which was cool. Took the nieces to Disney World, which was a disaster. Disney World is like hell on earth, I think, for adults. But yeah, the kids love it because, like, all the characters, it's fun and great. But it's not as cool as I remember it to be when I was a child.
You could not pay me to go to Disney World.
Dude, I tell you, it was 95 degrees. We got there really early, so we didn't have to wait on many lines. But man, it was crazy. And you know, it's like Space Mountain and some of these other ones, they're just not as big as I remember. Because I was obviously miniature size when I was there. So I'm like, man, this is Space Mountain.
Did you hit up Universal Studios as well?
We did not do Universal. The reason we went to Disney on the first day really was just so that we could be with my nieces, you know, because they were, I wanted to be there and see the reactions and just for that memory. So that kind of turned me off to everything as far as like waiting in lines and being out in the heat. So no, we did not do Universal.
Well, then I'm not, there goes my joke, because Universal Studios was like half of the Sharknado 3 movie. So I don't know if you, know if you caught that.
I knew that it was out there, and I heard it doubled the Sharknado 1 viewers. So they're going to make a fourth one, I'm sure. And it's probably going to go up to like 10 or 11.
They left the third one open. So Tara Reid is either dead. Spoiler alert, everyone. Spoiler alert. Tara Reid is either dead or alive, and they're going to take votes on Twitter for the fourth movie.
That's funny. They really hit they hit that one pretty hard.
It's insane.
But so on the way back, we were there for a week, did a whole bunch of cool stuff. We went to Cape Canaveral, saw the rocket go up. That was awesome. Delta 4, which is putting up military comms for communications for those guys over in the Middle East. And what else did we do? Saw some alligators. We did like an airboat thing in the swamp, so that was cool. And then my wife and I we road tripped it so we could check out some cities along the way. And on the way back, we picked up a new puppy. And I'll put some pictures up for you guys to see as well. But the puppy's name is Mattingly. And for short, we're calling her Maddie. So my nickname is Maddie Baseball. Obviously for Mr. Don Mattingly, who's one of my favorite players when I grew up. So we're excited to get a new puppy. She's my wife's right entertaining her right now, so she's not crying. Day one. This is day one away from her her mother and the litter and all that. So
Mattingly is a real strong puppy name.
Yeah, I thought so too. We were actually gonna call her Boss. That was like the first one. It was because we're both huge Springsteen fans, and then obviously Steinbrenner. But I don't know, it just didn't roll off the tongue.
Also, Boss for you said it's a girl puppy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not, can't really swing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even like do gender. The dog to me is a dog. Like, I know it's boy or girl, but like even names I don't think have to be gender specific. Like Mattingly, I guess Maddie makes it more of a girl's name. That's kind of what won it for. That's how I actually got the name, I think. That's what kind of sold the deal, was me saying to my wife, well, hey, we can call her Maddie. And it's real feminine. So there you go.
So,
but no, we're pumped up.
Did you catch any of the Hall of Fame inductions today? Well, we're recording on Sunday. This will come out on Monday. But so Sunday, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio were all inducted into the Hall of Fame. And those are four guys right there that are right in the 90s and 2000s time. I bet a lot of people listening to this podcast grew up watching some of those guys. So did you get to see any of that today?
No, unfortunately, I was driving yesterday and today, so I missed pretty much every sporting event yesterday and today. But I have some good friends who are who own the site Dugout Legends. So a lot of people, I'm sure, follow them on Twitter. If you don't, definitely check them out. They do a lot of really cool baseball history stuff. But they're actually going to be, or they were at the Hall of Fame induction And hopefully I'll be joining them at some point soon too. But I'm going to have them give a good recap, and hopefully we can get that on the site too. So I'll hear all about it, and I know we're going to talk about some of these guys too. They were definitely in that zone, you know, when we were growing up, and seeing them pitch was definitely part of our childhood.
Yeah, any of these guys you have an issue with, like, making it into the Hall of Fame?
So, like, I have a rule of thumb, I guess, for the Hall of Fame, and it's just my eye test. Like, I want them to be, in my head and my brain, like, one of the most dominant players of their era. To me, that's what makes a Hall of Famer. You know, the Hall of Fame is not for just very good players. It should be for the greatest players. And Randy Johnson, Pedro, and Smoltz, I have no issues with. I think all of those guys were dominant at one point in their career and extending points in their career. Biggio is the guy that I'm just, you know, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer personally. And he played for a long time, but he just never really stood out to me.
I'm totally with you. With all the steroid stuff, you can't go purely on stats anymore. You got to go on eye test. And if a guy's standing out and dominating the game, then I think he needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Craig Biggio never dominated the game for me.
Right.
He hung around for 20 years to get his 3,000 hits. And I understand his stats, you know, overall, he had a lot of hits and a lot of doubles. And that's great and everything. But when you talk about a guy in the Hall of Fame, he only had one 200-hit season. And he's a 280 career hitter. I mean, that's a very good player. That's not a Hall of Fame player. You look at guys like who are didn't make the cut this year or the last couple years, like Mike Piazza. Mike Piazza might be the best hitting catcher of all time. He right. needs to be in the Hall of Fame. He dominated for 10 years of hitting catchers. And you're telling me Craig Biggio is going to make it over him? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and, you know, there's that cloud, I think, because Piazza's name has been somewhere along the lines. I can't even remember where these guys' names were coming from or when they surfaced. But there was definitely a cloud for Piazza on the steroid conversation. So that very well could play into a big reason why he's not there. But I agree with you. I think he was a dominant player in his era. He was never really had a significant tie to the steroids. So he's not one of the steroid guys that everybody knows. So there's no reason I don't think he should be in. And I agree with you as far as Biggio too, man. It's just, I don't know. He doesn't do it for me. He doesn't pass the eye test. And I agree. I think that's a big thing you need to look at these days.
One person passed the eye test, but maybe not when he was with the Yankees, was the big unit, Randy Johnson. And I think, I don't know if you're like me, but those 2 years when he was with the Yankees, 2005 and 2006, were some of the most frustrating seasons to be a Yankees fan in my entire life.
Why was it frustrating for you?
Well, because they were just coming off of the 04 debacle, and
right.
they were a good team. But they were mostly offense. They would get to the playoffs, and then they would, you know, crap down the leg of their pants, and they would end up one and done in the playoffs. And Randy Johnson had a 4.37 ERA in two seasons with the Yankees. He was brought in to be the ace. The year before in Arizona, and I understand it's the National League, but he was friggin' lights out. Like, 18 wins, you know, sub-3 ERA or something crazy, and he comes
How
over.
Old was he was when he was on the Yankees?
I mean, he's at the end of his
late
career.
Late 30s? Yeah.
I'll look it up. But, I mean, yeah, he was old, but, I mean, he was good the year before. So, I mean, there's no reason. He was 41. Wow, I didn't realize he was that
old. Oh, he was 41, yeah.
He had a 2.6 ERA, though, for Arizona the season before.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe that was a – because in the 2005, 2006, in the, you know, mid-2000s, to me there was a big difference with – the offense from the National League to the American League during that time frame too. So, I mean, that could have played into it. You know, he knew a lot of the batters well. So, I don't know. He didn't do well, but 41 years old. I think at some point when you hit that age, when you're in their 40s, you just fall off a cliff. Like, there's no in between. There's no, I'm okay. It's just that you're done and you realize you're done.
Yeah, I mean, he did pitch a lot of innings, over 200 innings both of the seasons. So
yeah.
he wasn't a bad pitcher necessarily, and he won 17 games both seasons. So I'm not trying to say it was lousy, but he was not what he was brought in to do. And then his two starts in the playoffs, he gave up a total of 10 earned runs in those two starts, and the Yankees lost both those games. So in my mind, he didn't accomplish what he was brought in to do.
But he did enough in his career as the big unit to make it. He's a surefire, no doubter.
I mean, 97% on the ballot. Like, I'm not saying he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I'm just saying you know, as a Yankees fan, I don't have the best memories of Randy Johnson. And then you also remember 95 when he beat the Yankees.
Right.
Coming out of the pen for the Mariners, and also coming out of the pen in 2001 for Arizona.
It was 2001. It was the backbreaker.
So he really just killed the Yankees even when he was on the team.
Yeah, thanks, Randy. Appreciate that. Have fun with your Hall of Fame.
All right, next guy I want to talk about is Pedro. And, I mean, Pedro is the Sandy Koufax of the 90s and 2000s. Just unreal stuff, unreal 5-6 year run from Pedro. And I loved when Pedro was pitching because it was 3.5 hours when the Yankees were going up against him of just intensity. You knew it was going to be a great game. You knew you were going to either be, you know, on the top of the world if the Yankees won, or you're going to be pissed off and, you know, felt like crap for the next 24 hours if Pedro beat the Yankees. It's just, we're never going to see anything like that rivalry again, I don't think. And Pedro was really the center of it for the Red Sox.
He was. I mean, that was when the rivalry in my lifetime was at its peak, no doubt. And Pedro was, you know, was enemy of the state number one for the Yankees and Yankee fans. So, yeah, it was always you know, you hated him, but you loved to hate him because you enjoyed watching the games. And I think it did bring out the best competition on both teams when he was on the bump.
So you want to hear some fun Pedro stats?
Yeah, let's hear him.
So career versus the Yankees, he was 11-11, 500 pitcher. And you can say, okay, you know, there's a lot of starts. The Yankees were a great team also. So, you know, he's 500 pitcher. He always had a good ERA. So I looked into it a little bit more. And the Yankees, when Pedro started a game for the Red Sox, the Yankees were 17-10 against the Red Sox. That's a .630 winning percentage.
Who's your daddy?
It's really insane that they could beat a pitcher of that caliber 63% of the time. I mean, he was winning at a .680 or even better during that era, you know, .700 win percentage during that time. And when he was going up against the Yankees, the Red Sox lost most of their games.
Yeah, if you had asked me blind about that question, I would have probably gone the other way. Just thinking back and just to remember what kind of a pitcher he was. So that's kind of an eye-popping stat.
And it's because, you know, he would pitch well. He would go out and give – they would always, you know, run his pitch count out. He'd go out 6-7 innings of, you know, two-run ball. But the Yankees always had someone on the other side, if it was Clemens or David Wells or Andy Pettit or somebody to step up and match Pedro pitch for pitch. And then, obviously, the Yankees bullpen was lights out.
Yeah, we'd attack and get the best of the Civil War vet, Alan Embry. And, he always looked like a Civil War guy to me with his like goatee, and he always had a big chew in the cheek.
And El Guapo.
Yeah, El Guapo.
I can't even remember his actual name. And then the last guy is Smoltz, who, again, one of the best probably pitchers of the 90s. 200 wins, 150 saves, which is just unreal when you think about it. So I guess three very deserving candidates, and then Biggio borderline.
And Biggio, what? This was his third ballot, too. So yeah, that's another thing. Like, if you're not getting on the first, you're not getting on the second, like, what's different now that you're getting on the third? I mean, did your career get better? I never really understood that, especially for a guy like that. I don't know. See, he just needed some campaigning or, you know, some other, depending on the size or the strength of the ballot. You know, it's just that also just kind of leads to the fact that he really shouldn't be there.
The Baseball Hall of Fame voting has always been weird to me with the way they do these. Oh, he's, first of all, the fact that no one's ever made it 100% is stupid. And then also, like, oh, he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's a second ballot Hall of Famer. It's like, he's either a Hall of Famer or not.
Yeah.
Cut this bullshit and just let the great guys in and keep the borderline guys out. All right. This is the trade deadline coming up, so there's going to be a lot of news over the next week. And Scott and I have talked about possibly doing a trade deadline podcast, you know, specifically just talking about all that news. So we might be you might be getting that later in the week. But so far, there's been a couple trades and a couple guys the Yankees have had their at least been linked to in Kazmir, who was traded to Houston, and Johnny Cueto traded to Kansas City. Were you sort of upset to see any of those guys go to those teams?
I wouldn't call it upset, but I you know, I don't think the Yankees were going to go after Cueto. I thought Kazmir was a possibility. So, you know, the fact that they're both in the American League, they're in the American League now. Kazmir just kind of moving teams, is a little unsettling because Cueto's a good pitcher. And to have him in the American League now on that Kansas City team is definitely a little – that makes them, you know, scarier for sure, especially in short series. So, you know, I'm definitely not upset about them that the Yankees didn't get either one of those guys. But I didn't see Kansas City actually getting Cueto. That was surprising to me.
That definitely jumped out to me too, because you had heard a lot of rumors that whoever was getting Cueto was going to also have to take on Brandon Phillips' contract.
Right.
And I was worried the Yankees were going to do that if they got Cueto. I was like, oh, great, here we go. We're bringing in a aging second baseman with a big contract, and that would have probably meant Ref Snyder out the door.
I'd like to think that they've learned their lesson in that, and we've kind of turned the page. And, you know, honestly, the Yankees and Cashman and those guys have really kind of have stuck to that so far. They're saying all the right things. They're definitely saying some of these guys are untouchable. And that they're not going to overextend themselves with bad contracts. So, you know, I applaud them for that. Hopefully they can do that and continue that up until Friday.
Yeah, I mean, as a Yankees fan, I think you're less upset that the Yankees didn't get these guys and more upset that two teams who might be, you know, the Yankees are fighting for the pennant for got these guys.
Yeah, because those are two playoff caliber teams, no doubt about it. So that makes them scary, especially with Kansas City's bullpen. Houston's kind of a wild card at this point. You know, I'd like to see how they finish the season out. They have a lot of young players, so I definitely want to see how they finish the season. But Kansas City is a legit contender.
Yep, absolutely. And a couple more news unrelated to trade deadline going, you know, this week. So the Yankees have a four-game series upcoming against Texas, but they have not announced a starter for Tuesday yet. There's rumors it might be Chris Capuano, which just Mark lost in the box score already, or it could be a bullpen game combination. They could call somebody up. They could make a trade. But one juicy rumor out there is that they might call Luis Severino up.
Yeah, and they've denied it as well. People are denying it. People are going forward. So there's been a lot of definitely mixed signals on who's going to be up and if it's Severino or, you know, if it's someone else from AAA. You know, I think it's going to be Capuano. It seems like that's who he's going to be. And then, you know, maybe get Capuano going, 4 or 5 innings and then release it into the bullpen. Warren can get a couple innings in there. I feel like it's going to be one of those for Joe.
It might be ugly for Capuano. That Texas team has some hitters. It's going to be hot and humid down there. The ball's going to be flying. That could be a 9-8 ball game.
It's like a sacrificial lamb. Go ahead, Cap.
Yeah.
Just get out there. But the news in that is that they're giving days, an extra day rest for Pineda and Tanaka and the guys that, you know, they think really need it. So
yeah, that's what they're saying. Do you think there's any they're covering up anything? Maybe they know there's a trade coming?
I don't know necessarily if you can really call that this far out. But to tell you the truth, you know, Joe has been very open and talking about how he wants to give Pineda and he wants to give Tanaka, you know, some extra rest throughout the season so that they are fresh late in the season and, you know, ready for a stretch run. So I think he's kind of sticking to his game plan with that. I think, you know, he's really doing what he said he was going to do and give them some extra rest here and there.
Well, that hasn't really helped Pineda so far this year.
Definitely has not helped Pineda. You know, every time he's come off of a longer rest or a different rest, he's been bad. He's definitely been, not as sharp. So, but I think it has helped Tanaka a little bit. So, and I think he's the prize. You know, right now they want to make sure that he stays and gets through this entire season healthy.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. Just get through healthy and you know, enter the get into the tournament, which is the playoffs, healthy and see what you got there. So, all right, let's get into some of these game recaps over the week. The Yankees had another good week. Won both the series since the last time we talked. Swept Baltimore and then took 2 out of 3 from Minnesota, which, you know, I talk about that Saturday game. We'll get to it in a minute, but that's about as exciting a win as, you know, you can remember. Maybe that Tampa Bay extra inning game when McCann hit the walk-off, but those two games stick out to me. But the Yankees are 55-42 with a 6-game lead in the AL East, which is, it just keeps growing and growing every week, which is unreal.
Winning series, that's what we said early in the season, and that's what they've been doing. You keep winning series like they are, 2 out of 3 every single time is going to get you in a good place in the division, and we're seeing that now because that's what they keep doing, man. They just keep winning these series, and that's crucial.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're looking at a team that has control, and they control their own destiny in the AL East. So got to keep winning. Tuesday versus Baltimore, they won 3-2. This game was kind of frustrating if you're watching, because if you remember, they had a couple early runs off Wei-Yin Chen and then really could not get anything off of him for the rest of the game. And they had 11 hits. They went 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position, and they left 10 guys on base. So it was one of those games where you just like have a bad feeling in the back of your, you know, your stomach, thinking the Orioles are just going to chip away.
Yeah, and 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position is obviously not good. It seems like these guys go in ebbs and flows with the runners in scoring position. You know, if they struggle, it seems like they all struggle in a game. So this was one of those games where they just couldn't get the big hit, but they were definitely getting a lot of hits off of Wei-Yin Chen. So,
and Evaldi pitched in this game pretty much the same kind of start as he has been having the last couple weeks, or his, you know, 5 2/3 inning pitch, but only 2 runs, but a ton of pitches, 99 pitches. I don't know how many times we can keep saying these starters have to go deeper in games, but I feel like a broken record with that.
Right, and you know, we'll obviously get to Evaldi's start later in the week, which was today, which was a lot better. But yeah, he's keeping everybody in game. So you know, there's a couple things you can say about him, and it's the same thing we've said every time. Like, his biggest thing is using those pitches effectively, and you know, not throwing as many. And I think really living off of that fastball and locating the breaking balls. Like, his location is his bugaboo. If he's locating well, he is a dominant starter. But because it doesn't locate, he throws a lot of pitches, and then he gets ousted early in games. But at least he is keeping the Yankees in games by keeping them off of the scoreboard. So,
definitely, which is something I guess you can't say for some of their other starters.
Right.
I'm not going to say who. I think you can figure it out. Wednesday versus Baltimore, another win, 4-3. Nova was pretty solid in this game. He went a little bit deeper than Evaldi the night before. And the real standout to me in this game was that Shreve and Betances came in, looked absolutely unhittable, sort of killed any momentum Baltimore had. And then A-Rod tacked on a late inning run, and that was sort of it. Miller closed it out.
Yeah, and you know, that insurance run ended up being the go-ahead run because of the late home run by Chris Davis. So, you know, A-Rod's been coming up with some really big home runs, you know, late in the games too. I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing. We keep saying that, but it really is. So yeah, that insurance run ended up being the run that they needed to win the game. So seems like they've been having a lot of close games.
Yep, it's funny you say that, because to that point they had played 5 games since the All-Star break, and they were all one-run games.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's a lot of stress on your bullpen.
But it also builds a lot of character for a team, because when you're coming out on the positive side of a one-run game, I think that builds a lot of momentum for a team, and you know, it brings them through a tough game and kind of makes them a little bit more battle tested. So you know, I definitely like seeing them pull out those games.
Absolutely, because you're going to be playing close games in the playoffs, so you got to win those games. I mean, they went 4-1 in those games. I think, you know, if they were 1-4 in those games, you could say, well, maybe this team isn't ready for the playoffs, but they seem to be winning those close games. So
yeah, 4-1's a series win in the playoffs, and every game usually in the playoffs. I mean, you have a fluke here and there that you get your random blowout, but the majority of them are just high-intensity, you know, drama-filled close games. So yeah, you got to be ready for that stuff, and the fact that they are doing well in them is really good to see.
The next day out, they completed the sweep of Baltimore. We had gone into that series saying, you know, just win the series and you're pushing Baltimore deeper and deeper. But they ended up sweeping them, which was huge. And it was a 9-3 win. Tanaka pitched really well. It was a blowout win, so he kind of gave up 2 late home runs in that game. So I'm not going to really put too much into those late home runs in the 8th inning. But what I did want to mention is that since coming off the DL, he's made 9 starts, and in those 9 starts, he's given up 13 long balls, which is a really bad number.
Yeah, it's definitely an alarming number. You want to keep an eye on it. I agree with you on this particular game. I mean, I think those 2 late home runs are you don't really look at those, because you know, he's just trying to go around the plate, make them hit the ball, let his defense do some work, and get out of the game. And when you have a lead like that, you want to be around the strike zone. So, you know, they were looking for whatever pitch and took him deep a couple of times. But, yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to keep an eye on that number. He's been pitching well, and a lot of those have been solo shots, too, just from my memory. But
yes.
So they haven't really been backbreakers or really hurting him too badly. So that to me, that means he's being more aggressive when there's nobody on base, which I kind of like. So there's a couple ways to look at that, but it's definitely something to look at and keep an eye on.
The only ones that I can remember of really that they were big, you know, 2-3-run homers was that start in Houston a couple weeks back, where I think he gave up a 3-run bomb in that game. But other than that, you're right. It's been a lot of solo shots because he doesn't walk a lot of people, and he does bear down when there's guys on base and, you know, makes, you know, gets a big strikeout or a big, you know, ground out or something. So I still think Tanaka has been pitching well. It's just something to look at. I mean, you go into the playoffs and you're facing these great lineups. You don't want to be giving up a lot of home runs. Also, the fact you pitch in Yankee Stadium, which is probably one of the better home run hitting parks in the league. So just like we said, something to keep an eye on. Headley, though, in this game was got the big hit in the first inning. Yep. Bases clearing double in the first inning after the Yankees had loaded the bases with nobody out and failed to get guys in. So two outs, Headley, big double to center field.
Yeah, he absolutely bailed them out. They needed that hit. You know, that's a backbreaker if you come into the dugout when you load the bases with no outs and don't come up with anything. But he really that was a huge hit. It was a huge hit, and really, you know, shows that they're locked into two outs, no big deal. Let's go, Headley. And Headley's been really playing well lately, especially on the offensive side with the bat.
Yeah, I think you looked up some stats, right?
Yeah, so this month, the month of July, Headley's hitting, including today, over .330. Today he had his first home run of the month, but 10 RBIs and 5 doubles. So, you know, the kid's been outstanding. He's definitely locked down third base a lot more. I think he had a muffed ball today at third where he could have had the runner at home, but Gregorius still had a put out, so it was not an error. But, you know, overall, I think he's really, you know, cleaned up the third base play and kind of gone back to the guy that we thought we were getting, you know, as a really steady bat in the lineup and a solid glove at third base. So, you know, he's turning out to be a very good free agent signing.
Well, it's good to see because, in my opinion, he was one of the biggest disappointments of the first half.
Yeah.
And if you can get him hitting, you know, he's not going to hit .330, but if he's hitting in the high 200s with a little bit of pop, you know, .285, .290 with some pop, that extends the lineup 1-7. And Didi also as well. So, you know, you're looking at a pretty good lineup.
And, you know, Headley, he's always reminded me. I mean, I know he doesn't hit for average like Brocious did, but he reminds me of Scott Brocious in the sense that he just locks down third base. He's a ridiculous competitor. He comes up with some big hits. And he's just he's just like a solid guy to have on your team. And he draws, you know, Brocious comparisons. Now, Brocious hit for a higher average throughout his career. But, you know, Headley's kind of that guy, a rock over at third base.
Until Headley wins World Series MVP, I'm going to hold off on the Scott Brocious comparisons, but hey, maybe he'll reel that trophy in.
Yeah, and again, I'm not directly comparing. It just kind of reminds me of that kind of guy. He's a gritty, player.
Never your centerpiece on a team, but definitely nice to have.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yankees piled on Thursday, which is good because also how many times have we talked about the Yankees come out with a couple first inning runs and then do nothing the rest of the game. So it was good to see.
Yep. Oh, and how's that Panda contract looking, by the way?
Red Sox fans up here in Boston are not happy with Panda.
I could have predicted that. I love it. I love it. We'll put the Headley Panda contract and numbers somewhere so you can see him too and be happy. You'll smile when you see it.
Friday, sort of one of those games you just go home, forget about it, come up the next day. 10-1 blowout loss. And the last guy I think you want to see on the mound shoving the bats down your throat, Phil Hughes, shut you out.
Yeah, Phil Hughes coming back to the Yankees and just throwing 7 innings of some good ball. So, you know, what are you going to do? It's a game they couldn't get on top of them, and Phil Hughes pitched a good game. So that's two ex-Yankee starters in the past month that have shut us down.
Who was the other one?
second guy was Phelps. It was when we went to Miami and Eovaldi and Phelps dueled, and he shut us down. So that makes two Yankees two ex-Yankees that have come back to bite us on the opposing bump.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, right? You want to always beat your old teammates. And I think Phil Hughes has a little bitterness towards the Yankees and the Yankees fans. So,
well, you know what, Phil? Get over it, because it gave you a long time to prove to what you were supposed to be the guy. You know, you were our guy coming up through, and you didn't pan out. Let's all be honest.
He had an okay career with the Yankees.
Yes, but Yankee Stadium just did not do him well.
No.
Yankee Stadium was not a good place for him to pitch.
Well, he's back to he's leading the league in home runs given up this year.
Well, good for him. I'm glad he's back on that stat.
And Target Field is, you know, Yellowstone.
Right, yeah, no doubt. So they're longer. They're still hitting him out. They're getting the trajectory is there.
So the bad thing you want to, you know, maybe we need to talk about from Friday is that Pineda got crushed. Gave up a mammoth home run in the first inning to Miguel Sano. And then he was laboring the whole game. He was falling behind hitters, gave up a lot of hits, five runs, or five or six runs. I don't even remember what it was, but just really looked terrible.
And you know, we've seen this with him all year. It's like he does really well for a few starts, and then he has a blow up. And it's not just like a kind of a bad outing. It's a terrible outing. And you know, it's when he's not locating, or he's not, you know, he's falling behind hitters, and he's just getting crushed. So, you know, I don't know what it is with him, but it needs to not start. I need to see him actually, you know, laboring through the bad starts, not getting crushed.
Yeah, so that reminds me of like a quote I remember Roger Clemens saying, where he said, you know, it's great to go out there and dominate for seven or eight innings, but his favorite starts were the ones where he had to battle from the first pitch when he knew he didn't have his best stuff.
Right.
And his job was to just give his team six innings and, you know, battle through it and hopefully get a win or have the team pick you up late in games. That's what Clemens loved to do. So you would like to see a little bit more out of that from Pineda.
Yeah. And when you're not locating your breaking balls and because you're doing that, you're falling behind hitters, you're in for a long day. And that seems to be when he's not locating that slider, it seems like that's when he's really struggling. So, you know, I don't know what it is with him and not finding the consistency, or he's not finding his arm slot, or, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, he really needs to polish that up so he can fight through some of these bad starts.
Definitely. Speaking of bad starts, CC Sabathia started on Saturday. You like that transition?
That was a good one. Yeah, I like that.
And CC started on Saturday, gave up a two-run bomb in the first inning to Aaron Hicks, and then a three-run bomb to Torii Hunter a couple innings later. And you're sitting there Saturday night at 9:00, and you're like, you know, the Yankees are on their way to a series loss because they just got blown out Friday and they're down 5-0 Saturday doing nothing with the bats. And then everything changed. And I think we've got some audio we're going to play from A-Rod before we get into it.
A lot of people forget I entered the big leagues at 18 years old as Alex Rodriguez. Somewhere along the way, I made a left turn and became A-Rod. And I'm back to being myself now, and I'm having a lot of fun and really appreciating what the game has to offer and life has to offer.
I mean, that is, if that doesn't get you all warm and fuzzy inside, nothing will. That is a man, A-Rod, that has, or Alex, because
so we're not
going to
call him
A-Rod
anymore.
Yeah, don't
call him A-Rod.
That is Alex, who actually genuinely seems like he finally gets it. And I know we've said this on pretty much every podcast, but I saw that quote. He was on SportsCenter earlier this week, and it's just one of those things that stood out to me. Just wow, I cannot believe A-Rod. We're sitting here, July of 2015, and he's the centerpiece of this team right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I don't know how much more we can talk about, you know, him and how surprised we are, because it's an amazing feat what he's doing. I guess A-Rod's out the door and Alex is back, the baseball player, the kid who enjoyed playing the game and did it for the love of the game. And, you know, you could just see the jubilation on his face in the dugout when some of these other guys, some of the younger guys start doing well. You know, he's like truly invested in some of the younger players on this team, which is something that I think has gone unnoticed in a lot of ways. I think he's being more of a coach on the bench as well, and he's really you know, giving these guys a lot of his expertise on how to hit the ball and, you know, just approach and things like that. So, yeah, good for him. I'm glad Alex is back.
So I was so jazzed up Saturday night after the big win that I was listening to the WFAN postgame show, and Susan Waldman had A-Rod on, and she asked him, you know, what do you see in this team that's making you guys come back in all these games, and you seem like you've got a really good, you know, clubhouse chemistry and all that stuff. And he said that more than any other team he's ever played for, this is like a college team atmosphere, that they're all just getting along. There's some veterans, some young guys. Yep. And he said about John Ryan Murphy, he said, that's just one of our freshmen, and we're happy for him. And it's just unbelievable to hear him say that. Like, I didn't expect that. I don't know if anyone did.
Yeah, but you've seen it all year. I mean, I think he's been helping Didi as well, and he's just, you know, trying to acclimate him into, you know, playing this, obviously, this huge role of shortstop for the New York Yankees after an icon. So I think he has been a very calming presence. And then, you know, how much more clout do you need when you're Alex Rodriguez at 40 years old or almost 40 years old and producing the way you are, you know, after coming back and missing an entire season? So, you know, he's producing on and off the field in multiple ways. So, you know, he's been just a tremendous asset for this team.
Yeah, he's like the Van Wilder of the college team, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's going for it, and they're keeping him in school. They're keeping A-Rod on the team. They like it, and I'm glad he's back to feeling good about playing baseball, because that's when you do the best. That's when you're loose and you're playing it because you're playing it for the enjoyment of the game. To me, that's where this game that's when you find your best baseball.
Back to actually what happened in the game. He hit a home run early in the game to get the Yankees on the board, which went into the third level of Target Field. Haven't seen something up there since the home run derby a couple years ago from Target Field. Then he had a two-run homer in the sixth, and then tied the game in the ninth inning off Glenn Perkins, who's the closer, with another solo blast. So, unreal performance. First time he's had three home runs, I think, in 5 years. And then John Ryan Murphy got the three-run homer for the game winner. Just one of the best team wins of the year.
Yeah, and I was stuck on 95 in bumper-to-bumper traffic. Thank you so much for everybody rubbernecking for the broken-down car. I really appreciate it. I had a plan, you know, ready to be at my my hotel at like 9 o'clock so I could catch, you know, the middle of the game and watch the rest of it. And I didn't get back until the game was over. So I'd missed the entire thing, and the signal was terrible, so I couldn't even listen to it. And then I found out what happened. Great game. The highlights were amazing. I'm glad all that happened. And John Ryan Murphy with a huge home run, man. That's ice in your veins right there.
The Yankees made Target Field look small this series, because every home run, I feel like, was just blasted. And it's not an easy park to hit home runs in.
Well, that first A-Rod home run was, I think, the third deck. I mean, that was a shot.
453 feet.
Yeah, that was a shot. That was a mammoth home run. So, and then Murphy's home run was what, right center field. So that was a tremendous blast, man, to get him up. And I mean, the timing on that, you can't beat it. So
he was so juiced up, he forgot to touch home plate. Headley had to remind him to go back and touch home plate.
I know, and he was doing the stare, like he was just doing the stare in the dugout.
Yeah,
like he knew, he was just doing that stare as he rounded first, then third. It was awesome, and it does. They're acting like a college team. It's fun to watch.
So that college team also won on Sunday, 7-2 win, and Eovaldi finally got deep into a game. I don't know how many times we've said this, please pitch deeper into games, Eovaldi, but he finally got it done today, and he was ahead of hitters, and that's why he was able to pitch deep into the game, because he was able to mix in his curveball and splitter out of the strike zone and get it for swings and misses versus trying to throw it for strikes all the time and having it get hit for singles up the middle.
You know, when you throw 98, 99 miles an hour and you're locating your pitches, you're going to be filthy and you're going to see a lot more of this. So good for him. Good for him making those adjustments. You know, hopefully he can build off of something like this. And it's not like he's been bad before, you know. He needs to make these adjustments to get deeper into the games, because the way he's got the wins, right? That was his 10th win.
Yeah.
And
best record on the team.
That's right. So he's keeping the Yankees in games. That's what's happening. Thankfully, we have a bullpen that has, you know, kept those leads and given him the wins. But, you know, if he could start and he has been progressing. He absolutely has been progressing.
Well, the
in my
reason
opinion.
He frustrates me is because I know he has the potential to do what he did today, and he just doesn't do it most of the time.
Right. So, you know, this is a good start. Let's see what he can do from here. I mean, I'm very happy with the addition of Eovaldi. I really am. It's, you know, with him, what, three or four starter? That's a great guy to have there.
Definitely, definitely. Offense broke out in the sixth inning with six runs, and that was it for the game. Wilson had a little bit of a hiccup in the ninth inning. Betances had to come in and finish the game. And I feel like that's happened a bunch this year where the Yankees have tried to get Miller and Betances days off, and the other guys in the pen just can't do it. But whatever. I'm not going to focus on the negative. I'm going to focus on the positive. Turn over a new leaf.
It's one of those mindset things, too. You know, I think a lot of times relievers struggle if there's too much of a buffer sometimes, because they get a little too cute, and or they, you know, they're just staying too much over the strike zone and not pitching their normal game. So I don't know. I think it's kind of a mental thing with these guys. They need to just make sure that they assess the situation as a one run game and go in there and throw. But yeah, we have seen it a few times.
So upcoming, they're in the middle of a 10-game road trip. They've got four at Texas and then three at the White Sox. So kind of a tough stretch of road games here. And the Yankees will face Chris Sale, just in case anyone was wondering. He's absolutely filthy, maybe the best, one of the best pitchers in the game. So that should be fun. But tough stretch this week.
Yeah, and we got some payback for Texas because they swept us at Yankee Stadium.
Yep.
So we got some... we got some business to take care of down there, and you know, give it back to them. So, you know, it's a good time for us to play them. The Yankees are playing good baseball, and you know, let's hopefully we can get a series win.
And also this week, it's going to be a real busy week because the trade deadline's on Friday at 4 p.m. Yankees have not made a move yet. I know Cashman has said they're not going to do anything major. We don't know what that means because Cashman said that in the past and then gone out and traded for guys, but. What do you think, when we're sitting here at 4 p.m. on Friday, what do you think the Yankees will have done?
I see right-handed pitching in the bullpen. That's what I see. And possibly a back-end starter like Mike Leake. I'll stick to my my prediction with Mike Leake as one of the guys. But, you know, I think a Tyler Clippard is a possibility. From Oakland.
I would really
I mean, that's a great one. I mean, we talked about him before. I think he was one of your guys that you had mentioned.
Yep.
You know, he's got experience pitching in Yankee Stadium. He came up with the Yankees, and he's been very good. And he's a power arm out of the a power right-handed arm that has experience closing too. I mean, he was a closer for the Nationals for a little while as well. So
also the reason why I would like a guy like Clippard is because he wouldn't come in and be the closer. Miller would still be the closer, but Betances would probably still be the eighth inning guy. I don't want to mess with any of that, but Clippard would come in and be the seventh inning guy, and you mix in Shreve Wilson and Miller, or excuse me, and Warren. I mean, that's just absolutely filth up and down. So I think that would be a great pickup.
Yeah, and then Chris Capuano can be off the team too. So
thank God.
There's a couple things in there that we could do. But that's nasty. That's a lot of experienced arms and a lot of. To me, a lot of guys that Girardi can trust in the back of the bullpen.
Yeah, I absolutely see them going after a guy like that and not a big splash. I mean, we already saw Kazmir and Cueto, so those are two of the big fish down. There's no chance they're going to be in on David Price, and I think there's a very, very slim chance they're going to be in on Cole Hamels, especially now because the Phillies are probably after the no-hitter that Hamels pitched. Going to be asking for every one of the team's prospects that they're going to trade him to.
Yeah, I mean, the timing could not have been
unreal, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, they're definitely going to be, you know, going for the bank. But at the same time, like, they need to finally make some trades, you know what I mean? Like, they've delayed and delayed. But I know the Dodgers have been talking about it. The Dodgers seem like they have the pieces to make that trade, which is kind of scary on the National League side.
Yeah, that would be scary if the Dodgers picked up a guy like Hamels or David Price. We just saw the Dodgers kind of get roughed up in Citi Field, which is kind of funny because the Mets don't have an offense. But, yeah, I mean, you're looking at a three-headed monster there if they can get another guy in that rotation.
And, you know, part of me – so, like, the Dodgers have always been, like, my like a second team that I'll follow just because I used to be in Vero Beach for spring training all the time and watch them when I was a kid. So they're always, like, the second team I would always kind of keep an eye on. But you know what? They really betrayed me when they went out and bailed out Boston with all those players. So, you know, part of me really does not want to see them succeed with those guys on their team. But yeah, that's a filthy, you know, having Kershaw, Greinke, and then, you know, a guy like Price or Cole Hamels, that's nasty. That's built for the playoffs.
Definitely. And I think they definitely are a little concerned maybe with Kershaw in the playoffs. I know I would be because he's been rough the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, he just hasn't shown that he can do it. But, I mean, I feel like he's one of those guys that, Yeah, he's just gonna. He's too good to be bad as long as he, you know, in the playoffs for, you know, an extended period. Like, it's gonna click at some point, and I think he's gonna be dominant. So I don't know. I don't get too worried about that that kind of stuff because I feel like the talent will overcome. And it's not like he's like a, I don't know. He doesn't come across as a guy that gets flustered either to me.
Yeah, some guys just can't handle the big stage.
Yeah.
All right. So as we mentioned earlier, we're going to look to have a podcast later in the week for the trade deadline special. So hopefully we'll be doing that on Friday, and hopefully we can talk about some of the moves the Yankees might have made.
Yeah, and real quick, interesting note. I actually just got a text message about this too. But one of our guys is in the clubhouse of Trenton Thunder, and this past week, one of the Oakland Athletics director of personnel, one of their guys was in the clubhouse looking at some players too. So keep an eye on them. That could be a move for someone, possibly Arenda or you know, a couple other players at Double A. But you know, that to me, that says Tyler Clippard.
Yeah,
I mean, possibly Zobrist.
It's not Scott Kazmir.
It's not Kazmir. Yeah, so it's a Clippard or a Zobrist or a guy like that. So you know, my feelings on Zobrist, I don't really want to see him here because I feel like the Yankees need to bring up Rev Snyder and keep him up. But if they're not going to do it, you know, we need to upgrade second base one way or another. So if they're dead set on keeping Rev Snyder in the minors, then maybe it's not a bad move. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be a fun week. So I think we have some mailbags to get into.
Yeah, we have a couple of them. And the first one's actually something that we really haven't talked about. But I know Andrew and I, you know, after the Yankee season, we're gonna keep the show going every single week, and we're gonna mix in a lot more things than Yankee baseball just because of the off season. But we're gonna talk a lot of fantasy and just different things that are going on. So this one's actually about baseball, fantasy pertaining to the Yankees, and it's from Rudy G. He's at RudeDog71 on Twitter. He says, "Hi from Texas. Really enjoy your podcast. Thanks, Rudy. Appreciate that. I play fantasy, but am also a diehard Yankee fan. That I let it affect my lineups. For example, I have no Red Sox on my teams, and I feel guilty when I start someone that is playing against the Bombers like Y.N. Chen tonight against Evaldi. How do you guys deal with your pinstripe pride versus your fantasy lineups?"
Well, Rudy, it's a good route not putting any Red Sox in your lineup this year because they blow.
Yep, that's definitely a good move this year for sure.
And as far as fantasy baseball goes, I actually don't play fantasy baseball. I never really got into it. It's funny because I'm one of the biggest diehard baseball fans you're ever going to come across, but the fantasy angle of it never really appealed to me. So you could probably speak to this more.
So one of the downsides of fantasy sports, in my opinion, is that you become a whore. You start liking everybody on your team, no matter who they play for, because you got to win. And usually when you're in a fantasy league, it's against your buddies. So like to me, like allegiances for fantasy, I'll sway a little bit, but I really try to keep emotions out of it when I'm doing this. And I am the Bronx Pinstripes Fantasy League champion 3 years in a row. I mean, these guys are trying to give me a run for the money, all the writers on Bronx Pinstripes, but it hasn't happened.
Maybe they just suck.
No, I don't like to say that because that would take away from my championships. But no, we'll see. You know, so I see what you're saying. I don't do that. You know, if it's a player that fits what I need, I'll go after him. But I don't necessarily root for the player. I think I do that more in fantasy football just because it's 1 week, you know, but baseball, there's just so many games, you know, I don't know, like one game doesn't really make or break your week. So, I see what you're saying, man, but I would honestly, if you're trying to win your league, you got to take emotions out of it. That's a big thing. And you got to exercise that discipline. So
I will say this though, if you ever bet on sports, which I've done a little bit, nothing crazy, but I never bet on the Yankees.
Me either.
I don't even touch baseball, but I will never bet when I'm emotionally invested in the team.
I do the exact same thing because if I win, then you know, I'm happy. But if I lose, it's like detrimental. Like,
yeah.
I hate them at that point, like because I don't ever bet on baseball either, but I will. I'll lay some money on football.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a Jets fan, so it's pretty brutal. You know, the bets that you can get, and then I just start getting so angry because I'm already an angry Jets fan in the first place. It just makes me more angry, so I don't do it anymore.
Pro tip out there for everyone: never bet on the Jets.
Yeah, we'll see what happens this year. We'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait. All right, I think we got another mailbag, right?
Yep, this two this week. This one is from Leanne, and she's at Leanne B. Miller on Twitter, And it's just pretty simple. It's any worries, their lead will help or will let them relax. The Yankees talking about their, you know, their extended lead in the AL East.
That's a good question. And I think it ties into a question I wanted to ask you overall. So first, let's get to Leanne's question. Do you think they'll relax now that they have a 6-game lead in the division?
Absolutely not. I think this team is going to put their foots down on the throats and just keep going, man. I think the chemistry is too good in that clubhouse. They have, you know, they're really working together. They have a lot of complementary players. The pitching's there. They're not going to. I think the pitching that we have, I believe, really just like takes away long losing streaks because I think we have two guys at the top can really end them at any point. So I don't see that happening. I really don't.
I agree. So here's the question I wanted to ask you. Have your expectations for this team changed at all now that we're almost in August and they're first in the division by a healthy margin? You know, think back to spring training and early in the season, what your expectations were for them then and what they are now. Have they changed?
Slightly, but not much. Because, you know, going back to our predictions, I predicted them losing in the ALCS. I predicted them winning the AL East. And I forget it was the Royals maybe, or it might have even been the Mariners, which I was wrong on. But I think I predicted them losing in the ALCS as my final prediction. But so slightly they have, because I think, you know, one of the reasons I thought that they were going to do well this year and have, you know, and win the AL East was because of the top tier talent that they have. And that top tier talent has become even better than I expected. I mean, these guys are performing better than I expected. And I actually think the best is still to come from our pitching staff. I don't think we've seen the best of our pitching staff yet. So the fact that we're producing, you know, at such a high level on offense, and that we have not seen the best from our starting pitching, I think leads me to, at this point now, I truly and fully believe that we could win the World Series this year. So yes, they have changed.
Oh, I mean, I definitely think this team is on a short list of teams that could win the World Series this year. They're not the favorite by any means, but maybe they're fourth or fifth when you're talking about all of baseball. But for me, my expectations have totally changed.
Right.
I was thinking maybe they'll compete for a wild card spot. And if they make the playoffs, that's how they were going to get in. They did not have the firepower to win the division. And now we're sitting here. If they don't win this division, I mean, that's a huge collapse is really what it is. So they need to win a round in the playoffs, and anything less than that, I think, is kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's some really good mojo going on in the Bronx right now. I think we're going to have some exciting late season baseball in the Bronx, in New York. I mean, honestly, I kind of hope the Mets do well on that side, so we have it on both sides, because it's just fun to watch, and it's fun to see the city light up like that. So, you know, I think this team is perfectly balanced with young players and veterans, kind of like we were talking about before, how you know, Rodriguez was talking about how John Ryan Murphy was just one of the freshmen coming in and doing well. And I love that dynamic. That's such a cool dynamic. And with the amount of talent they have in the AAA who can help later in the season, I think it's, you know, I really think this team is poised to really do well and go deep in the playoffs.
It's a great point, and this comparison might – you know, rub some people the wrong way, but I actually see some similarities as far as team chemistry on this Yankees team to that 2013 Red Sox team, where it was sort of like a team you didn't expect to do much, but have just sort of all hit, you know, on their peak of possibilities and sort of all gelling together. So I like their chances.
Yeah, I mean, well, the difference is that we have like giant names that you know had the capability of doing well. Like the talent was there, and you know, I did not expect them to gel like this. That's so surprising to me.
Yeah,
that's definitely what's surprising to me is the fact that they're gelling like this, and the fact that you know some of these guys are really stepping up. And I think it's because you know let's look at this. If A-Rod and Teixeira were not having good seasons and they were being mediocre, they wouldn't be taking on these leadership roles more than likely. They wouldn't be as involved with the younger players. But the fact that they're doing well and succeeding is actually attributing to them, you know, really helping these other guys out and giving them more of a platform.
Oh,
I think so. 1,000%. It's a huge deal, and it really helps the team in two different ways.
Yeah, you can't be a bum on the field and lead a clubhouse. It just does not work. You need to be performing on the field in order to lead in the clubhouse. And both those guys are. McCann is.
McCann is definitely. And Gardner. Gardner's really stepped up. I mean, and Gardner keeps the clubhouse very loose. That's a dynamic that he brings to this table, to this team. And, you know, they don't have the big distractions of the farewells that they've had in the past. So this team is kind of playing with house money at this point. You know what I mean? They're like, you know, this is kind of a new deal. Like, A-Rod's here, I know, but he's kind of a different guy at this point. But he's actually not. He's playing like he's 25 years old. But, you know, they're playing like, you know, this is our team. This is our new team. Like you said, McCann, I think, is stepping up in that leadership capacity. Guardy is really taking this on, you know, as the guy from the farm system to lead the team. And it's awesome to see. It's so much fun to watch.
So something I saw tweeted the other day is that the Yankees have their lowest attendance average game in like three seasons. And you look at it, it's like their teams have been pretty bad the last 2 years, and they're good this year. Why aren't people going to the games? It's because there's no farewell tours.
Right.
Well, I want to put out a memo to all Yankee fans. Go to the games, because this is the best team we've had since probably 2012. And, you know, we don't know how much longer with these guys who are aging, you know, next season and in the next few seasons, if we're going to get this again. So embrace this team, because it's the best we've had in a while.
No doubt about it, and I think that stadium is going to be rocking come August, September, because we're going to be right there in the thick of everything. So I fully expect that. And you're right. I mean, you really can't downplay how much Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter meant to New York to New Yorkers and to Yankee fans, and you know how much their farewell tour brought people to the stadium, because people wanted to see them one last time. So. Now we're playing baseball, and it's all about baseball, and it's about the Yankees winning championships, and it's good to see a team that's capable of doing that again.
I love it. On that note, I think we're going to end it for this week, and we'll talk to you later at the trade deadline.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.